VOA News, I'm Lori London. Tributes continue to flood in from the worlds of politics and entertainment for the late Aretha Franklin, who died Thursday at the age of 76. The AP's Warren Levinson reports from the Apollo Theater in New York.
The marquee at the Harlem Landmark read, "Remembering Apollo legend Aretha Franklin."
That's our queen. That is our United States queen. And, you know, we are sad, but at the same time, we're just like, you know, she will rest in peace.
Tyrone Scott was among those making the pilgrimage to the Apollo to remember Aretha, who first performed there with the Count Basie Band in 1962, when she was just 19 and not yet the Queen of Soul. The winner of 18 Grammys and a Presidential Medal of Freedom died at home in Detroit. Aretha Franklin was 76. Warren Levinson, New York.
President Donald Trump called Franklin a great woman with a great gift from God. Former Presidents Bill Clinton and Barack Obama also paid tribute to Franklin, known as the Queen of Soul. Franklin performed at 3 U.S. presidential inaugurations and was also an advocate for the U.S. civil rights movement. There is more controversy over, of course, this has been a very sad day. Aretha Franklin's music jumped to the top of the iTunes charts after news of her death broke. AP music correspondent Margie Zarzaleta reports.
What you are? Within 2 hours of the news that Aretha Franklin had died, her music topped the iTunes charts. Her 30 Greatest Hits album bumped Queen by Nicki Minaj from the number one spot on the album chart. Franklin's song Respect topped the songs chart. Other Franklin songs like You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman, Chain of Fools, and I Say a Little Prayer were in the top 10. Franklin died of pancreatic cancer in Detroit at the age of 76. I'm Margie Zarzaleta.
This is VOA. Well, following President Trump's revocation of former CIA Director John Brennan's security clearance and the retired admiral who oversaw the raid that killed Osama bin Laden has a message for President Trump. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports from the White House.
Bill McRaven says he'd be honored if the president would strip his security clearance, just like he did to former CIA chief John Brennan. In an open letter to the president published in the Washington Post, McRaven, a four-star admiral who headed the Pentagon Special Operations Command, says few Americans have done more than Brennan to protect the nation. He says the president's sadly mistaken if he thinks he can suppress criticism, which McRaven says will continue until, in his words, you become the leader we prayed you would be. Sagar Magani at the White House.
U.S. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin says the United States is ready to impose more sanctions on Turkey if detained American pastor Andrew Brunson isn't released from house arrest. Mnuchin said the statement made the statement during a cabinet meeting with President Trump Thursday.
We've put sanctions on several of their cabinet members. Working with you, we have more that we're planning to do if they don't release him quickly.
Earlier this month, the U.S. Treasury Department sanctioned Turkey's ministers of justice and interior in response to Brunson's detention. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has denounced the U.S. move, saying America's trading a valued NATO ally for a priest. Turkey accuses Brunson of espionage and is holding him under house arrest pending his trial. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo named Brian Hook the top diplomat's senior policy advisor, a special representative for Iran on Thursday. Pompeo said that Hook will lead the Iran Action Group, which was also announced on Thursday, and will coordinate the State Department's actions against Iran.
The Iranian people and the world are demanding that Iran finally act like a normal nation. The Iran Action Group will drive daily progress on these objectives, and I hope do much more.
Washington announced earlier this year that it would withdraw from the Iran nuclear deal and has once again imposed sanctions on Tehran, calling the country a destabilizing influence in the region. The United States has said it would only end the sanctions of Iran if allowed the negotiation of a tougher deal. And authorities say a Chinese tourist was attacked and killed by a hippo while taking pictures on the edge of Lake Naivasha in Kenya's Rift Valley, 91 kilometers southeast of Nairobi. A second Chinese tourist was injured in the incident Saturday night. I'm Lori London, VOA News.
We'll be right back. morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbate in Washington. Today is Friday, August 17th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Uganda charges three lawmakers, one with treason.
He has been charged with possession of illegal firearms, which is normally a monopoly of the military, and then remanded to military detention in Makinde Barracks in Kampala.
Alex Atuhaire is the publisher and editorial director of an online Ugandan publication. Liberian President George Weah has met with leaders of the country's 26 political parties. There are renewed calls to implement UN travel ban on some South Sudanese accused of impeding peace. Cameroon's secessionist movement called for a million-man march this Sunday in Washington, D.C.
We want to take our case. The case for the independence of the Southern Cameroon's Ambazonia to Donald Trump, whom we believe is the only courageous leader who can intervene in this case and support us.
Chris Anu is the Secretary of State for Communication of the Ambazonia Separatist Movement of Cameroon. And this morning, a tribute to Aretha Franklin, the Queen of Soul, who passed away Thursday at age 76. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Ugandan authorities have charged three lawmakers, one with treason, for their part in the alleged stoning on Wednesday of President Yoweri Museveni's convoy. One of the MPs, Rabo Kyagulanyi, also known as Bobby Wine, was charged with what the military calls unlawful possession of firearms and ammunition in his hotel room. They were arraigned on Thursday before a military court. Bobby Wine had gone to campaign for an independent candidate in this past Wednesday's by-election in Arua. President Yoweri Museveni and opposition leader Kizza Besigye were also there to campaign for their respective candidates. Bobby Wine's candidate, the independent, won that election. Alice Atuhaire is the publisher and editorial director of an online Ugandan publication.
He has been charged with possession of illegal firearms, which is normally a monopoly of the military, and then remanded to military detention in Makinde Barracks in Kampala. The other two MPs and an MP elect were charged in the civilian court with treason and remanded in prison in northern Uganda, that is in Buru, until the end of the month. The fate of another MP is still unknown because his pictures came out yesterday. And he looks to have been really very badly tortured. So he has neither been produced in court nor been released from detention.
There was a by-election that was held in the Arua municipality. Are you saying that the winner of that election has also been charged?
Yeah, he has also been charged with treason. They were charged because they say that they organized an illegal procession that broke the president's convoy and also they pelted the president's convoy with stones.
What about the allegations coming from the lawyers of this member of parliament that he was tortured? What are the police saying about that?
The police is actually silent about that because now the matter is in the military court. And the military spokesman did issue a small statement indicating that the MP was charged, but the government is silent on the torture. But the pictures coming through confirm that there has been torture while these MPs were in detention. Most especially Bobby Wine and other MP, Francis Zake, who is yet to be presented to court.
I'm confused. These are members of parliament, Alex, and
yes.
Why are they being charged in the military court?
It's only Bobby Wine who has been charged in military court, and the reason is that the police say he was found in possession of guns and ammunition. Remember that, first of all, the side of Bobby Wine have dismissed all these as trumped-up charges, and the owner of the hotel where the gun and ammunition was said to have been found has also denied that Bobby Wine or any other person entered the hotel with any kind of gun or ammunition.
The ruling NRM party lost this by-election, and I think it has also been losing other recent elections. Could this be a retribution for the loss in Arua?
Precisely, that's what the commentators, especially on the opposition side, are saying, because every election where Bobi Wine has been campaigning for candidates, the they have defeated candidates of the ruling party. So I think he's being singled out. He's being looked at as a ritual program for the ruling party.
Alex Atu Hairy is the publisher and editorial director of an online Ugandan publication. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. Diaspora Cameroonians, mostly supporters of the self-proclaimed Ambazonia separatist movement, are converging in Washington, D.C. this weekend for a two-day conference, which will culminate on Sunday with what they are calling a Million Men March. The group is seeking an independent Southern Cameroon. Chris Anu is the Secretary of State for Communication of the self-proclaimed Ambazonia Separatist Movement. He says the purpose of the march is to bring the case for an independent Southern Cameroon to the doorstep of President Donald Trump, whom he describes as the only courageous world leader who can support their cause.
We are having a conference which starts Friday, and a Million Man March that comes up on Sunday. The Million Man March is taking place at the White House, and we want to take our case for the independence of the Southern Cameroon's Ambazonia to Donald Trump, whom we believe is the only courageous leader who can intervene in this case and support us.
What sort of reaction or feedback have you been getting from, say, the Trump administration or anyone in the U.S. government circles?
I think so far in this struggle, Trump administration has been the only administration that has approached our problem with lots of enthusiasm. We've already had a number of hearings at the Capitol, and we've also had a number of meetings at the White House. And this one is also a big one to build up on what we already have had. No other government has given us this opportunity, not even the United Nations.
I read a statement where the State Department expressed some concern about two or so videos that have been released recently showing allegedly Cameroon military atrocities. Do you consider that as a State Department or U.S. government's sympathy for your cause?
Well, I think it is both. Nobody looking at those videos can sit quiet and have Cameroon do what it is doing. You will not imagine that the Minister for Communications in Cameroon, Issa Chiroma, actually said the government of Cameroon had investigated that situation and arrested a number of the forces involved in the abuses. That is evidence. So what the government of the U.S. has done in looking at those videos is what every government in the world is supposed to be doing. Cameroon is committing genocide as I speak, almost in every town and village and city in the southern Cameroon's Ambazonia.
On the contrary, we have spoken on many occasions with the Minister of Information. The government considers what your group is doing as a terrorist operation.
Well, who is a terrorist? A terrorist is the one that burns down cities. A terrorist is the one that burns down towns and villages. A terrorist is the one that breaks into people's homes and shoots them at point blank when they are not armed. The Cameroon government soldiers are the terrorists. They are the ones killing us. They are the ones that declared war on us. We are merely defending ourselves. We have no weapons. Our children, our young men are defending their parents and defending their property.
Now, the march on Sunday, you have referred to that as a Million Men March. Do you have a million English-speaking Cameroonians in the diaspora, say, in the United States?
In the United States, we have more than that. We have over 2 million of us in the United States alone. So when we say a Million Men March, all may not necessarily come out, but if everybody came out, I bet you we will get those numbers.
In some organizations, there are always some people who don't support your cause. Do you have that in your movement?
One thing that will interest you is that the conference we are having here at the weekend is a unity conference where all those other organizations are coming together for what we call a collaboration or unity conference. So every other group is behind this Million Man March and the conference that comes up at the weekend. There is no division amongst us. Every hand is on deck. Everybody, every group, every leader is on board.
Chris, thank you very much again. So nice to have you on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Chris Anu is Secretary of State for Communication of the Ambazonia Separatist Movement of Cameroon. He was speaking with me from the U.S. city of Houston in Texas. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Friday, August 17th, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. This century, an initiative of the Enough Project is asking member states of the United Nations to implement the travel ban and asset freeze that the UN imposed on certain South Sudanese officials accused of blocking peace in the country. Josh White, Director of Policy and Analysis at the Century, says his organization has confirmed that top South Sudanese military commander, General Jock Riak, who was sanctioned by the UN in 2015, never received a UN waiver when he traveled to China for a meeting.
General Gabriel Jock Riak is subject to UN sanctions and has been since 2015. We recently learned that last month he traveled to China to attend a state-sponsored military conference, which is essentially an opportunity for them to buy weapons or to essentially enhance military cooperation with China. And in this case, it appears that the Chinese government let him travel without permission.
It should be the Chinese government that you need to put on the spot because they allowed this South Sudanese general to enter their territory despite the travel ban on the South Sudanese.
It's critically necessary for sanctions and other tools of leverage not just to be put into place, right? So we recently saw another round of measures, you know, the listing of two more individuals at the UN, an arms embargo, all of these new points of leverage to encourage the parties to actually adhere to power sharing agreement and adhere to agreements that they have previously reached but not implemented. Not just important to bring those pressures to bear, but to also actually enforce them. And it's critical not just for China and Russia and countries around the world to do this, but also countries in the region. Gabriel Jock Riak also has a home in Kampala that the Century has highlighted in its report 2 years ago, documenting his illicitly obtained wealth. The Ugandan authorities have not taken action against this house in Kampala, despite the fact that Gabriel Jock Riak's assets are to be frozen.
The parties in South Sudan, rather the warring parties, have been meeting in Khartoum, and it appears like they're making progress towards ending the conflict in South Sudan. Instruments of diplomacy like sanctions and threats still necessary to make them, if you like, behave?
Absolutely. So what we are saying is that there have been a number of agreements that have not been fully implemented to date. You know, what has been agreed to in Khartoum is a power sharing agreement that really, one, is a small piece of what really needs to be effectuated in order for real meaningful change to come to South Sudan. There are elements and sections of the previous agreement that still have not been brought to bear and have not been put into place in terms of governance and accountability and transparency.
That was Josh White, Director of Policy and Analysis at the Century, an initiative of the Enough Project. He was speaking with John Tanza of VOA's South Sudan In Focus program. Liberian President George Weah on Thursday met with leaders of the country's 26 political parties to talk unity and reconciliation. Weah asked for the National Forum earlier this week to solicit ideas from the opposition on how best to govern the country for sustained development. Moses Gazewu reports from the capital, Monrovia.
For nearly 3 hours, the parties were locked behind closed doors in discussions with President Weah and Vice President Joel Howard Tedor. President Weah did not speak to the press at the end of the meeting as he was carried away in his presidential motorcade. But his information minister Eugene Nangbe told journalists Mr. Weah had called for the meeting with the opposition to appeal to them to be patient with his administration tries to make good on his campaign promises.
Some of the specific issues that the president spoke about himself was that, you know, we are all Liberians. We fought a very heated election last year, but now that he has won, he wants everybody to come and bring their ideas on the table. So some of the ideas that were presented were written down. Some of them also said they will submit written presentations to the president. He informed them that he will listen to some of the views that they have presented, but he himself, as a new government, with that have gone about 6 months or less, will be asking the opposition to give him time to deliver on his promises.
It's been 6 months since the We Are Government assumed power, but it has come under serious criticism from the opposition for not doing much for the Liberian people. Information Minister Nangwe said it was the responsibility of the opposition to criticize the government, but productively.
Well, we recognize that it is the right of the opposition. In fact, it is the duty of the opposition to productively criticize the government. And they are performing their role. But we as a government, we also have a responsibility. And that responsibility is to reach out to every segment of the society.
There were mixed feelings among Liberians ahead of today's meeting, with some suggesting that President Weah had called the forum to manipulate the opposition. This belief has been pushed aside by Ko Bangalu, vice chairman of the former ruling United Party.
The opposition are not necessarily praising us. Equally so, they don't just oppose unnecessarily. We oppose constructively when there's a need. That's what our approach will continue to be.
The gathering brought together heads of political parties and some candidates that were defeated by Weah in the 2017 presidential elections. One of those in the gathering was Benin Ayue of the All Liberian Party. Mr. Ayue said he was baffled by the attitude of some officials of the Weah government. Ayue proposed the prosecution of individuals who committed atrocities against the Liberian people.
All these speeches that are not reconciliatory, you know, people going and saying negative things about people, abusing people, calling them all sorts of inhumane things. We told him that it's time for him to stop it. And also, interestingly, we call for justice. Those that committed war crimes must be brought to trial. They must be brought to justice. You see, in Liberia, only one person is in jail. And a lot of people committed atrocity. Let them free Taylor or carry everybody to jail.
Although the meeting was held behind closed doors, the jovial expression on the faces of participants showed they were encouraged by what they heard. The question now is, will President Weah and his government take into consideration the input he has asked of the opposition? Moses Gazeu, VOA Daybreak Africa, Monrovia, Liberia.
Musical icon Aretha Franklin, known by millions around the world as the Queen of Soul, is dead at the age of 76. The American singer, who had been ill for a while, was considered one of the country's greatest musical artists. She sold millions of albums, received numerous awards and honors, including 18 Grammys, and was loved by generations of fans, artists, and celebrities the world over. Viewer Julie Tabor has more on the life of the Queen of Soul.
In 1967, Aretha Franklin's rendition of the song Respect soared to the top of the charts, earning the singer the first of her 18 Grammys, the recording industry's most prestigious award. The hit song became an anthem for women.
But everyone wants respect. Everyone needs respect, from the young to the very old and in the middle, male, female. We all want respect, and we all want to be appreciated. So it pretty much means the same thing to me now that it did then.
Respect is exactly what the singing sensation received over a career of almost 60 years. From fellow artists, celebrities, presidents, and millions of fans around the world.
I've been so many places in my life and time.
She achieved many cultural milestones along the way. At the age of 52, Franklin was the youngest recipient of the prestigious Kennedy Center Honors and was one of 14 legendary Americans to receive the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2005. Franklin was tireless, performing at countless venues, including President Barack Obama's 2009 inauguration. Many say she was as gracious in person as she was on stage.
Music is my thing. That's who I am. I'm in it for the long run, so I'll be around singing what you want, baby, I got it.
While the Queen of Soul may no longer be physically with us, her music will continue to reign for generations to come. Julie Tavo, VOA News.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin with the threat of a possible suspension by FIFA as Ghana on Thursday backed away from controversial plans to dissolve its graft-ridden football federation as it reached a deal with FIFA to clean up football administration in the country. Ghana's Attorney General had taken steps towards dissolving the embattled Ghana Football Association after an explosive documentary in June showed officials allegedly soliciting bribes worth millions of dollars. FIFA President Gianni Infantino met a senior delegation from Accra on Thursday in Switzerland, with both sides agreeing to establish a normalization committee to replace the executive committee of the Ghana Football Association. Kujo Fiano is the president of the Ghana League Club Association.
The government, the clubs, or the football people, we've dragged it up to the level that we are all seeing disaster looming. Yes, somebody can say that, oh, why not? Government has the right to get football stalled. And it is not a time to apportion blames, but to ensure that we get our football back on track. So we are trying all available means at our disposal to dialogue with government at the highest level as major stakeholders in the game to find a lasting solution.
Staying with FIFA, the world governing football body on Thursday released its latest ranking, which places Senegal and Tunisia as the joint highest African nations on the latest FIFA world rankings. Tunisia dropped three places to 24 in the world after winning just one of their three group matches in Russia, while the Teranga Lions climbed three places to 24 globally after a win and a draw from their Group H campaign. Egypt are the biggest losers globally, dropping 20 places to 65 after three losses at the World Cup. The Faroes are now 11th on the continent. Morocco, who managed a draw and two losses in Russia, fell five places to 46 overall, while Nigeria, Africa's other representatives at the World Cup, lost just a single place after their one win and two defeats. Now to the Women's World Under-20 World Cup, where Nigeria crashed out of the competition after Spain booked their spot in the semifinals on Thursday following their 2-1 victory over Nigeria in the quarterfinals. And now to the CAF Champions League fixtures slated for this weekend. Wydad Casablanca will play host to Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa in the Group C match at the Stade Mohammed V in Morocco later tonight. The Moroccan side are heading into this encounter sitting at the top of the group stand, having defeated Guinean side Horea AC 2-0 in their previous Group C match at home late last month. Elsewhere, Primeiro Augusto will aim for a positive result in their clash away to Etoile du Sahel at the Olympic Stadium in Sousse on Saturday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, August 17th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good weekend.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.